Hi, welcome to Missouri Made, the podcast that gives you an insider look at Missouri politics. I'm State Representative Deb Lavender, representing District 90, Kirkwood Glendale area of the St. Louis County. Okay, today our guest is Minority Leader Crystal Quaid, a representative from our Springfield area. I think you're District 132.
Yes.
We're so excited to have you on our podcast today and just really want to acknowledge you for becoming the Minority Leader in your second term here. I'm delighted with the work that you're doing, the paths that you're charting for us, and just your leadership in so many different ways, from the members of our caucus to the floor work, and certainly inside of what's going to be happening over this next year as we talk about our priorities.
Thank you.
One of the things that you've done for our caucus is you've introduced a weekly news conference or press conference, and this week you were talking about some of the initiative petitions and some of the things that have passed and not passed, and wanted to know if you can just kind of, if you want to start with Clean Missouri, which passed, might be able to launch us in and then talk about some of the other aspects that you're looking at.
Definitely. Well, first I will say, thank you for having me on the podcast. Very excited to be here. We decided as a caucus and leadership team to start doing weekly press conferences, really because in the super minority, we often don't get to talk about what we want to do as legislators. We spend a lot of time playing defense and talking about what we're unhappy with from the Republicans, but we very rarely get time to discuss our bills and legislation. So since session started, we have been doing weekly press conferences highlighting the bills that we're working on to talk through some of the things that we'd like to see come through. So yeah, this week we highlighted issues dealing with initiative petitions. So in November, voters overwhelmingly told us how they felt about various petitions, and unfortunately what we've seen is, since we've been back in the legislature, is a very quick and aggressive undoing of the will of voters. Particularly, we can start with the Clean Missouri. So as you well know, it passed in with 62% of the vote. And Clean was an initiative that did a few different things. First point being a transparency measure for legislators. So in Missouri, due to the Sunshine Act of 1973, our elected officials are subject to Sunshine, meaning that when folks want to get information from us on our emails, on what's happening as public officials, we turn that over. The legislature has not overwhelmingly felt that we were subject to that same Sunshine
right.
legislation.
Well, and we can be pretty specific. In my time here, and I've started my third term or my fifth year, Democrats have willingly turned over our emails and office communications if we're Sunshine. And the Republican caucus has chosen not to do that. The Senate Republicans have chosen to make some of their committee meetings closed, as in not allow videos or recording of the proceedings. The House had gotten a little bit more laxed on that these last couple years. More of the committee chairs were allowing the committee hearings to be recorded and then broadcast. But over in the Senate, we were still running into quite a bit of trouble even this past session.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it is very important to note that the Democratic caucus has taken that position that we are subject to Sunshine. And so we've had lots of arguments, for lack of a better word, through my time here on what should be open to the public and what's not. And so that's why I was excited that Clean Missouri addressed that. And so they put the legislature back under and made very, very clear that we are also subject to the same Sunshine regulations that everyone else is, elected officials from governor all the way down. And so that was one piece of it. Clean also did some redistricting reform and put redistricting out of politicians' hands and under the hands of a nonpartisan demographer, so someone who actually does maps for a living, an expert in that field.
And there was actually a way that the auditor can create the rules of who that demographer, the qualifications they need to have. It is sent to a partisan Senate to object to a demographer if they choose to. So kind of like picking a jury, we've all watched TV, and an attorney may say, I accept this juror, I don't accept that juror. So the partisan Senate could actually weed out some people that they felt might feel were too partisan And then the rest of the names go back to, and there's a limit to how many they can eliminate. Then the names then go back to the auditor, and it is truly then a lottery that pulls the organization, the person that would become the state's demographer.
Definitely. I think it was a move in the right direction of really making our elections fair and equitable. And so that was one piece of that. And then the last piece of clean was dealing with lobbyists, imposing some caps and limits, and then also when folks can become lobbyists. Unfortunately, in Missouri's past, we have had elected officials resign and then immediately become lobbyists or staffers. And we have imposed some restrictions on that, but clean took it a little bit further to make it.
Well, and the reason that's important is if we didn't have that in place, I've now been here 4.5 years. I could quit today, get a lobby job tomorrow, and truly come back and lobby my colleagues.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And so if I've been on a committee, and let's pick utilities because it's an easy one to pick, there's a lot of money inside of utilities. It's a big game as far as moving monies. I think Ameren just announced they were going to do $4 billion worth of work across our state.
Yeah.
And part of that was a rate increase that we put through last year. So if I'm on the utilities committee and I quit today and come back and lobby my friends on the utilities committee tomorrow for Ameren, that just really creates a conflict of interest.
Definitely does, yes.
So this puts in a 2-year waiting time period before we can come back and lobby our previous colleagues.
Yeah, so again, Clean Missouri passed overwhelmingly, 62% in the state of Missouri. But unfortunately, as soon as we got to session, we started to see the majority party unwind it. As early as the rules that we adopt, so as you well know, Representative, we have to adopt rules for our decorum in the chamber, what we can wear on the floor, an array of things. And part of that was undoing the sunshine piece for us as legislators. And so that was the first time that we saw that. And then we have also seen through House Bill 445 an amendment by Representative Nick Schroer that, in my opinion, completely guts the Sunshine Act. And so it doesn't just undo the legislators' piece of clean where we are subject to sunshine, but actually undoes it so no elected officials anywhere have to turn over documentation.
Right.
The supporters of this say that this is under the guise of protecting constituent information.
Right.
But you know as well as I do that we have always had the opportunity to redact that personal information.
Right.
And always, you know, and we have. Of course, there are some folks who maybe did it wrong, but we are the custodians of our own documentation.
Right.
And I know when I was Sunshine, when I first became minority leader, we redacted information that was personal for our constituents. And so that clause has always been there. And so this amendment in House Bill that made it through was pretty detrimental.
Yes, it was. And then one of the issues that I've heard or statements that I've heard about Clean Missouri from our Republican colleagues is, well, the voters didn't know what they were doing. And I find that so highly offensive. And a real good example I have for that was the marijuana proposals. Mm-hmm. We had 3 on the ballot. We had 2 constitutional amendments and 1 statute. And what intrigues me, of the 3, the voters picked what you and I might say was the best one.
Definitely.
And so how can you say the voters didn't know what they were doing when they truly were able to look at 3 different language bills, amendments for marijuana, and pick the one that really serves the state best?
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating. I would much rather our colleagues simply say, we didn't like it.
Right.
We thought it was wrong because
right.
of X, Y, Z.
Right.
But instead, what they're doing is saying that the voters were not intelligent enough to know
right.
what they were voting for. And that is so offensive.
It is.
Not only as an elected official who is sent here by my constituents, but then also just as a citizen of Missouri.
Right.
To think that elected officials don't think that Missourians are smart enough
no.
to vote right.
The other one that I have is the gas tax.
Mm-hmm.
We Republicans in the legislature last year purposefully wrote the language for the gas tax to look like it was supporting Missouri Highway Patrol because if it supported Missouri Highway Patrol, then we thought the rural people of our state were going to be more likely to vote for it. And it was deceptive. Mm-hmm. It was deceptive in its language. It was deceptive in what it looked like it was doing. So the money we were going to get from the gas tax actually went to the Highway Patrol. Mm-hmm. But then money that went to the Highway Patrol no longer went to the Highway Patrol. It went to MoDOT for the roads and bridges. Mm-hmm. So it was deceptive in nature. And we knew on the House floor when it passed in May to go on the ballot that it was deceptive. We spoke about it being deceptive, and the people of our state knew that also, and it was voted down. Mm-hmm. Had we said our roads and bridges are bad, we want to increase your gas tax, we have the lowest tax in the nation, I think that vote might have turned out different.
I very well may have, and that's another example. I mean, if you want to talk about the different confusing ballot initiatives, I mean, and
yes,
it is, again, just kind of, I mean, it's just funny that we're going to pick one and say this one's confusing and ignore the fact that the other one dealt with all sorts of taxes. And
right.
Yeah,
and we did a good job through the state to weed those out and get some good ballot initiatives.
Definitely.
Now, one of the concerns and that is in front of us right now is some of the bills that are both here in the House and the Senate that will alter how initiative petitions are even placed on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Do you have some familiarity with some of
Definitely,
those?
Definitely, yes. Some of them, a few of them were actually filed last legislative session and came through the committee that I served on, government oversight. And so I've heard some of them already. As you know, the Secretary of State is really pushing a lot of this. So essentially, I mean, there are variations of this bill, but there's one that will have I believe it's a $500 fee to file your mm-hmm. initiative petition that you can get back if it moves forward. And then there are page costs. So once you get beyond so many pages, I believe it's $5 a page for every additional page. It might be
And there's
be
even
10.
One bill that says you have to be charged for every signature
yes.
that you turn in.
Yeah, if you are using paid staff, which oftentimes we know that these groups do, and I know folks in my hometown of Springfield who use this as an extra job. Mm-hmm. You know, they are working their normal, 40-hour a week job, and during election season will take additional work to bring some more money in. So if you hire someone to gather signatures, then you have to pay per signature. Whichever one of these versions makes it through, fundamentally, I believe that these are just making it harder to yes. go through the process. And
right.
I believe that initiative petitions are another way, alongside elections, to hold us as elected officials accountable. If we're not doing what our citizens want us to do, here is another way that they can get done what they believe should be done.
I completely agree that we have the initiative petition for the sake of our people being able to tell us what they want to see happen that we're not doing. The Right to Work initiative was one of the true representations of the people of the state. The legislature decided we were going to be a right to work state. And between, I believe, February, when that bill was passed and signed by then Governor Greitens, the labor organizations had until August 28th, which is when the law would go into effect, to collect signatures.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who don't know, you have to get signatures from 6 out of the 8 congressional districts. It has to be 10% of the last gubernatorial election statewide numbers. I mean, there's a formula that gets you to how many signatures you need. But it's not simply going out in Springfield and collecting 1,000 signatures.
Mm-hmm.
For the Right to Work petition, I believe they needed 125 or 150,000 signatures from across the state of Missouri, and they actually came in with more than 300,000.
I think it's 360 maybe.
Yes, and they did that with, I believe, a week to spare. And part of what these organizations do, so not only are you out collecting signatures, you're verifying your signatures, you have staff, or you hire people, or people volunteer to make sure that you who've signed in Springfield are truly a registered voter, to try to make sure you haven't signed twice,
mm-hmm.
because we all don't have a good memory of, you know, I was at the library last week and signed something, and today I'm at the grocery store and I mm-hmm. signed something. But it's not an easy process to go through. And how labor organizations and people in this state ruled 67%
mm-hmm.
against Right to Work, I think shows that the process is important, it's necessary, and sometimes helps support the will of the people better than the legislature does.
I definitely agree. And I think that right to work is probably one of the best examples that have, since I have been alive, that we can look to for this, because not only did they get more than double the signatures needed or around there, they also got it from all of the congressional districts, which had never been done before, is my understanding. And the legislature, again, tried to make it hard. We moved it from November to August, so voter turnout would be lower. We're always trying to throw barriers in the way. And this was something, we keep using the word organizations when we're talking about initiative petitions, but it's not organizations as we know it in regular life. This was groups of people, regular folks who volunteered their time. I know there were some folks who were paid too, but I know that there were thousands, tens of thousands of people who volunteered their time to stand at the library, like you said, or go door to door. They did various things to get these signatures, and it was not a partisan thing. We saw Republicans and Democrats both signing this. To continue with the example that this is, Right to Work, I believe, failed in all but four counties in the state. But yet we still have a majority Republican legislature, which shows us that we had folks who voted for the Republican legislator voted against Right to Work. This is not a partisan issue.
Right.
The citizens did not want it to happen.
Right.
And they had the ability, thankfully, through our initiative petition process, to tell us we were wrong.
Right. I know, and it's valuable. Not every state in the nation has this. I think I remember 2/3 of us do, and different states have it in different forms, but this is an important process that the people of the state can continue to raise their voice so we know what that they want to see happen.
It is, and with that, I want to talk, if I may, about a House joint resolution that Representative Robert Sauls from Independence has filed to protect the initiative petition voter-approved measures. What we're seeing this year is not only with the Clean Missouri, but Right to Work itself and the minimum wage increase, we have seen bills filed to undo all of this in an array of ways. But Representative Sauls has filed a bill that will require the supermajorities to alter voter-approved statutes for 4 years after passage. So, I can't tell you the exact numbers and details, but my understanding is the first year after a ballot measure is passed or whatever is done with that, we can't alter it, and we have to have a supermajority to do so. The next year, it's a little bit less, and then the next year, it's a little bit less, and then come the fourth year, we can undo it with normal numbers, which I think is important, too. Sometimes we may pass something, years go by, and we need to try again. Technology changes, things change.
Or to update it,
Things change over time, and so I do think that it's okay to bring something back to the ballot again. I'm not saying that we need to completely undo that, but I think it is very important that we, as elected officials, respect the will of voters. And Representative Saul's resolution really codifies that for us and says that, we're not going to just jump right back in the next year and undo it. We're going to put measures in place that make it harder for us as a legislature to undo what folks want us to do.
Well, and I think that's very important. And I think inside of this Clean Missouri, especially the redistricting, which is, I think, the component that Republicans are fearful of, if we even look at the Trump-Clinton election in the state of Missouri, we talk about how Trump beat Clinton by 20 points. Trump got 57% of the votes in the state. So if you just think then 60%, we have more than 60% Republican legislators on the House floor. So if the House floor truly represented the people of Missouri, we would have more than 47 Democrats. And I think that's part of what scares them, is if we were to truly have a state that represents the voters in the state, we would have 98 Republicans on the floor.
Wow.
We have 116 today. So I think that is the part that scares them, is if we truly get a nonpartisan map, they will lose members on the floor. Now, 97 still gives the Republicans a good majority. Mm-hmm. The majority is 82. But when you no longer have the super majority, legislation becomes different. You need to speak a little bit more with your colleagues across the aisle. Mm-hmm. You need to negotiate a little bit more for the amendments and the outcome of the final bill, because now it does become more important who's voting with you. Right now, the Republicans can lose, what would that be, 16, 17 people, and still pass things very thoroughly. If they are at 97 and they lose 17 people, they now don't have a majority to pass that bill. And that's where you get much better governance, much better bills that are being able to be passed, again, for the state, the people of our state.
And I'll add to that, I also believe that it's important. Folks will tell you, Republican or Democrat, that more balance is better. And I believe that even if we were in the supermajority situation, a balanced government brings good conversation, which brings good policy. You're not going to get very far if everyone in the room agrees with you, you know, to really create something that has every perspective involved. But I think it's also important if we have legislative districts that are more competitive, that also, as elected officials, holds us accountable. You know, I represent a district that has gone back and forth. It's definitely gone more Democratic since I've been there, but it has gone to both parties within the last, you know, 10 years. And when you're in a situation like that, every vote that I take, I have to think about the 45% of Republicans who live in my district. And so every vote that I take, I am thinking about those folks and whether or not I can justify what I'm doing. And that goes for either side of the aisle. We have Democratic districts that don't have Republicans run, and we have Republican districts that don't have Democrats
right.
run. And so what we see then is, you know, I believe that when we have more equally balanced districts, we as elected officials have to we are held accountable mm-hmm. in a different way. And I'm not saying that folks who aren't in competitive districts aren't, because they definitely are in partisan ways.
Right. But I think we all know, if you're living in a district, if you represent a district that is 52% Democrat and 48% Republican or vice versa, you are going to be more of a centrist type of person to have won in that district anyway. If I have 80% Democrats in my district, which some do, you are more likely to be a very perhaps progressive liberal, because that's who the makeup of your district are. And having people on all ends of the spectrum, from extremely conservative to extremely progressive, helps with the legislative process. But it's having people hunker down in the middle, mm-hmm. which is very important for us as well.
It is. And, you know, I consider myself a very liberal person. And I represent a district that isn't necessarily matching my ideology all the time. But as I said before, you know, when I run, I have to be much more, I don't say much more, but I have to personally be very honest and upfront with my stances on things. Because then when I'm on the floor, I don't ever want to take a vote that
right.
I then am not being genuine
right.
to my constituency
yep.
about. But then also, as I said, I literally every time I push a button, knowing that it's a very liberal, you know, idea that I personally have or stand with, I am thinking through my constituents, the conversations that I have had, and what I am going to say to them when I go back home. And if ever for a second I can't justify what I'm doing, I'm not going to vote that way. And so I think there is some value in having districts that are more competitive, just as I said, of holding us accountable to mm-hmm. what we're doing and forcing us to communicate with our constituents. Not everyone does here. And I think that might help
yes,
it a little bit.
I think so too. Well, listen, I appreciate your time. It's been a long day. We've been on the floor for quite a while. Yesterday, we were on the floor since 10 this morning till almost 6 this evening. So thank you very much for taking time in your day and your responsibilities and accountabilities to be with us. It's over.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Please subscribe to the podcast. We'll have a new episode each week. Follow me on Facebook and on Twitter at Deb Lavender. We'll have a website for you where you can find all of our episodes, videos from the Capitol, and more. Thank you for listening.